We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, 21st chapter, verses 1 to 4, Venu Geet. Gopis glorify Krishna's flute. Verse 1. Shishikuvaksha itam sharasvacha jalam padmakara sukantina nyavishavayana vatam sukoko palakochita. Shikadev Goswami said, "Thus the Vrindavan forest was filled with transparent autumnal waters and cooled by breezes perfumed with the fragrance of lotus flowers growing in the clear lakes. The infallible Lord, accompanied by his cows and cowherd boy friends, entered that Vrindavan forest." So what do you remember from this morning's class? Analogies. Yes?
Akam moon is compared with wisdom.
Wisdom.
And also with Mukunda.
Mukunda, yes.
Wisdom, people get relieved who think themselves as body.
Right. They get relief.
Gopis, after separation, their pain is relieved by Mukunda.
Okay. Anything else? Yes, Nama? Right. The gopis, everybody except the gopis got relief from the wonderful breeze. Yes. More pain of separation because the breeze simply reminded them of Krishna. Those are stars, the night sky, the stars in the sky, and the moon, yes. It's just like seeing the darshan of the Vedas. Oh, no, that wasn't the stars. That was... What was it? The moon and at night? I can't remember. What was it at night?
It was the stars.
It was the stars. Okay.
Yeah, but no moon.
Okay. The stars.
So
yeah. Someone put the moon in there, one of the commentators.
Yeah, the sky is, the moon is Krishna.
Yeah. Moon is Krishna.
It's all
yes. Anything else? Yes, no. Consciousness with Krishna in the center. Ah, devotional service never goes in vain. He will give the result. Even when we least expect it, the result will come.
We don't have desire.
We don't have desire. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like cows, those birds, when they're fertile, they are followed by their mates for sex enjoyment. Same way for devotional service. Even if you don't desire it, you will get it.
You will get it.
After Chaturmasya of life.
After the Chaturmasya of this life. Yes.
The rainy season
of this life. Then we will get the achievement. Yes.
And after that, mud banks keep the water within their eyes.
Yes.
To keep our energy going internally.
Right, we should conserve our energy for internal spiritual realization, internal things, not externally waste our energy for the external energy. Yes. Good for meditation, verses of chapter 20. Good verses for meditation. So in this chapter 21, we'll hear about the reaction of the gopis to Krishna's flute. The whole chapter is just going to be about the flute of Krishna, most of the chapter. There will be a few verses which are about something else, but most of the chapter is about the flute of Krishna. So they have these are the highest devotees, the highest lovers of Krishna. So we're going to hear their realizations. From this chapter, we can get a glimpse of what is pure love of Krishna. What is actual prema? What is love of Krishna? They are seeing Krishna everywhere, the gopis, with the rivers, with the creepers, the flowers, the different animals of the forest, how they react to the flute of Krishna. And they see also different ecstasies manifest, like when the rivers hear Krishna's flute, then they make whirlpools. So this is like their hearts also when they hear Krishna's flute. So and it expresses the mind of the river. So the gopis are going to see how all the the living entities, all the creatures of Vrindavan, are going to be in ecstasy when they hear the sound of Krishna's flute. So, verse 1 is about the forest. A lot of what we heard in the last chapter, transparent waters, cool breezes, fragrance of lotus flowers, being stolen by the breezes. So, Venu Geet, I'll be reading, I mean, this whole book is about this one chapter. And
21.
And, yes. So, I, for my verses today, I'll read what the different commentaries say on this verse. And then when I come back, I'm going to Ujjain today, so when I come back, then I'll read the highlights of what I would have read if I had been here. On the first day that I come back, the first class will be on Thursday. I mean, you all have Bharijan's class Monday and Wednesday next week, and then I'll come Thursday and Friday.
So, Wednesday?
Yeah, Nityananda's appearance day is on Tuesday. Yeah, so you have a holiday on Tuesday. So next week would be Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So Venu Geet. In Srimad Bhagavatam, Shukadeva Goswami follows the description of the rainy season by narrating the many glories of Braja's autumn. The prime eminence of autumn is the vibration of the flute. So we didn't hear about that yet. What is the most excellent thing about autumn? It's Krishna's flute. Issuing from the lips of Sri Krishna, this treasure of autumn spreads across the fields and forests to the beautiful cowherd girls of Braj, who, overwhelmed with its song, glorify other fortunate beneficiaries of its concert. The lush forest of Vrindavan is the transcendental stage upon which Sri Krishna, the master performer, accompanied by his eternal retinue, has appeared. Through the narration of that great sage, Shukadeva, Krishna's friends, cows, and gopis enact the script of his eternally revolving pastimes for the audience of swan-like devotees. Such is the extraordinary atmosphere of his sports. Having described the autumn, Shukadeva Goswami now cites its special features, which impel Sri Krishna to reveal his impenetrable pastimes. Such impetus is called, Sanatana Goswami says, such impetus is called upakaran. In the mind of Sri Krishna, the all-attractive person, reveling in association of his loving associates, Vrindavan forest creates an extraordinary enchantment. So we heard a lot of that before. Therefore, it is known as Manohara, seducer of Hari's mind. So there, that word Manohara will come in one of the verses today. It's not there yet, but it will come. The charm of Vrindavan allures Sri Krishna, for it is the manifestation of his internal potency and is non-different from him. Gazing upon the display of natural opulence present before him, Sri Krishna marvels at the beauty of his own energies as a child gazes at his reflection. If Sri Krishna, the all-attractive person, is attracted by Vrindavan, how captivating that place must be for all living entities. It is simply Manohara. When Krishna sports, now it's talking about his water sports. I guess he does that in autumn too. When Krishna sports in the water, his friends hide by swimming among lotus flowers, which become indistinguishable from their own lotus faces. If one boy happens to discover another, they playfully beat each other, holding the stems of lotuses like a club. Now here is the thing about Krishna and the gopis. In addition, there is a rare species of lotus that grows on land. It's known as Stala Kamalini. Lotus, land lotuses. How do they grow? When Krishna, in anticipation of meeting the gopis, walks over the Chintamani soil of Braj, under the canopy of a full moonlit night, land lotuses sprout in his wake. So Krishna walks, and a lotus comes up after he lifts his foot up. Every time he has a footstep, then a lotus sprouts up. At night, in the moonlight of autumn, Krishna is walking, and he's leaving a trail of lotuses in his path. They just sprout up as soon as he lifts his foot up. Amazing, huh? You look amazed. You can't believe it. Yes. And spread their unique fragrance only for the duration of that pastime. So it just happens, he's going to meet the gopis, and then the pastime, just for that pastime, Krishna's walking and lotuses are sprouting up after he walks. So this is one of the wonderful... Vrindavan is such an enchanting place, and we don't even know the half of it. We're just getting a glimpse of what is Vrindavan by hearing these acharyas' commentaries. An unlimited variety of aromatic flowers blossom in the trees of Vrindavan, each a reflection of Sri Krishna's inconceivable artistic skill. Although trees generally blossom in the spring, in the land of wonder, which is Vrindavan, the seasonal laws act only for the pleasure of Sri Krishna. If one asks how such divine fragrances came to be, now we're going to hear the story of the origin of fragrance. What does it say in Bhagavad Gita about fragrance?
I am the fragrance
of the earth. Punyo Gandha Tivyam Cha. So how did the earth get its fragrance? Because the earth is just mud, and then all these different fragrances, flowers, come out of it. Prabhupada said in his lecture on that verse that the fragrances are in the earth, all these fragrances. And then they just manifest as different flowers. How did the earth get that fragrance? We will hear the story now. A very wonderful story. The answer is, Mother Earth has adopted the scent of Sri Krishna's body at the time of his bath. Mother Yashoda removes his cloth, allowing it to fall on the ground. The assimilated scent of his limbs, which resemble a mixture of sandalwood pulp, camphor, musk, and aguru, is immediately plundered by Prithvi Devi. She then distributes it to all her associates, like trees, bushes, and flowers, who forward it to their offspring, the flowers. Each flower, according to its qualification, receives some portion of this aroma, which is then known as its own bouquet. So now we understand that verse from Bhagavad Gita, I am the fragrance of the earth. It actually is true. The fragrance of the earth is coming from Krishna's clothes, which his mother drops, and the earth plunders. So it actually is true, I am the fragrance. It's Krishna's fragrance that we smell when we smell the flowers. Isn't that wonderful? No. Yes, okay, if it is a relevant question. Yeah, and he also said that it regulates the life airs. That gives me an idea. My life airs are very unregulated. I should smell the flowers. Vata dosh. Kamalini. Stala Kamalini. Stala Kamalini.
Stala means
place, yeah. Now, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur talks about this chapter. He says, in this chapter, the gopis, being pained by Cupid because of the song of the flute, repeatedly sing the glories of the flute. The glories of the flute, the glories of Vrindavan, the animals, the wives of the demigods, and so forth. These gopis, although remaining in the cowherd village, relate what they can see through their transcendental eyes of love, the various charming activities Lord Krishna performs upon entering the forest. Having described the fall season, and being about to describe the pastime of playing the flute, which is indigenous to that season, first Shukadeva describes the entrance of Lord Krishna into the forest of Vrindavan. So those are the verses we're discussing today, just entering into Vrindavan. And then the next day, Burjan will enlighten you about the flute. What happens after he enters the forest of Vrindavan. So by the word Padmakara Sugandhina is understood by connection with the full lotus flowers, fragrance and coolness. So verse 2, the lakes, rivers and hills of Vrindavan resounded with the sounds of maddened bees and flocks of birds moving about the flowering trees. In the company of the cowherd boys and Balaram, Madhupati, Sri Krishna, entered that forest, and while herding the cows, he began to vibrate his flute. We should actually sing the Sanskrit. Kusumita vanaraji susmibringa dvijakula gusta sarasarim mahitram Marupatiravagaya charayanka sarvashapalabalaschakujavenam. Purport is suggested by the words chakujavenam. Lord Krishna skillfully blended the sound of his flute with the lovely sounds of Vrindavan's multicolored birds. So we're having a concert here. We've got the bees singing, we've got the birds singing, and we've got the flute, all weaving together. Krishna was weaving the sound. Thus an irresistible heavenly vibration was created. So I have a song here, a poem by Dravida Prabhu, who has poeticized this verse and the fifth verse of this chapter. So I'll just sing that for you. Vrindavan's rivers, lakes, and hills rang out with lovely hums and trills, as flocks of birds and madden bees rejoiced among the flowering trees. To those idyllic woods and glens repaired Govinda with his friends, Sri Rama and the cowherd boys, to taste the most exquisite joys. And as they walked along the way, absorbed in herding and in play, Sri Krishna beauty absolute began to blow his mystic flute. With peacock plume upon his head and small blue blossom on each ear, he entered Raja's woods with tread sublime, a dancer without peer. His golden yellow garments glowed, his garland reached down to his knees, and from his lips the nectar flowed and filled his flute with melodies. As Krishna thus began his day with friends who sang his glory sweet, he beautified the forest way with fine impressions of his feet. Well, that is Dravida Prabhu's rendition of verse 2 and 5 of Venugit. And he has pictures to go with it too. So if you ever see him, then you can ask him. So Sanatana Goswami comments on this verse. The verse beginning Kusumita is describing the inflaming of the effect of Cupid. So we're just reading, okay, the sounds of the beads and the birds and the flute, but what is happening is the gopis, they're hearing this and they're getting inflamed with Cupid, or they're feeling separation from Krishna. By the words, he entered the forest, it is understood this pastime is eternal, being reenacted as before. Okay. Madhupati, we heard different analysis of the word Madhu. Krishna is Lord of the Yadus. He brings in spring. What is that all? Were there any other references to Madhu? Yes. Well, Lord of Mathura Ras. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Oh, Mathura. I was thinking Mathura. Mathura. Okay, Mathura. Okay. He is also Lord of Mathura.
Yeah, the Lord of all sweetness.
Sweetness, Mathura. He's also Lord of Mathura. Now, who is this? Sanatana Goswami has another additional meaning to Madhu. It's a particular kind of intoxicating beverage. He's the master of that also, which indirectly implies the season brought forth intoxicating beverages and was also itself intoxicating. Okay, so this
honey.
Yes, honey. Jiva Goswami says, because of being members of the Yadu dynasty, the cowherd boys are also madhus. So the Lord means they were all together in his pastimes. And he's the Lord of spring also. So let's see what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says on this verse of verse 2 of Venugit. As Krishna Madhupati entered Avagaya, the forest, with his mountains, lakes, rivers, and flowering groves, he skillfully blended his flute song, Chukujavenum, with the lovely sounds of Vrindavan's chirping birds and buzzing beads. The word Madhupati means Lord of Spring, month of Madhu. Inference is that when Krishna, personification of spring, entered the forest in autumn, the forest became beautiful with spring flowers. Okay. Now, Venugit, this book here, we'll see what this book says about this verse here, about the bees. We'll hear more about the bees. Although bees naturally become intoxicated by drinking the honey of flowers, the fortune of the bees abroad is not caused by the diversity of its flowers, because their auspicious diet is the liquid essence of devotional bhavas. Shukadeva Goswami refers to them as Susmi Bringha. The intoxicating nature of the spiritual energy induces them to gather in swarms and perform congregational chanting of Sri Krishna's pastimes. So they're all having Harinam Sankirtan, the bees in Vrindavan, following Krishna. And they're intoxicated by the spiritual energy, not by the pollen from the flowers. These bees are after something else than flowers. So charged with devotion, they're always absorbed in discussion of topics of pure bhakti. When the bees become intoxicated in transcendental bliss, gorging themselves on their nectar fare, they fly erratically here and there in search of the object of their devotion. And their object is Madhupati. So they're looking for Madhupati. Again. As bees have a blackish-blue complexion, Krishna's form is possessed of a buffed black hue. So now the similarities between the bees and Krishna. As bees have yellow bands decorating their trunk, Sri Krishna is always clothed in golden attire. As bees decorate their limbs with pollen, Krishna is adorned with golden ornaments. As bees whimsically taste one flower after another, Shyam savors the association of gopi after gopi. As bees make a low humming sound, Sri Krishna produces a bewitching vibration with his flute. So comparing the bees to Krishna, they're very, very similar in lots of ways. With so many shared characteristics, can the bumblebees of Braj be censured for mistaking Madhupati for the emperor of all bees? So he's the king of the bees. And that's why they're following him also. When those collectors of honey are fortunate enough to see him, their excitement reaches a feverish pitch. Using his Vaijayanti garland as an excuse, they come in front of him, singing his glories and gorging on the sweetness of his beauty, aura, and words. These bees are true rasikas. They know the essence of all sweetness found in the honey of flowers flows from the fountain of sweetness, who is sweeter than all things, is known as Madhupati. So then we have a song by Bilva Mangal Thakur to celebrate the occasion of Madhupati entering the forest of Vrindavan. I don't know if I know the tune. You know this Prashanta Madhuram? Can you sing that? You know it? Or? Madhuram, madhuram, vaparasya vibhor. Madhuram, madhuram, vadanam, madhuram. Madhugandhi midu smita metaraho. Madhuram, 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 madhuram. Like that. Anyway, that was just a melody that came from somewhere. Okay, so this is the essence of Madhu. Also, here's another meaning of Madhupati, according to Sanatana Goswami, is associated with a special attachment Sri Krishna exhibits towards his devotees. So Krishna is very sweet when he associates with his devotees. Another meaning of Madhupati. Here we go with the bees. As bees, oh yes, Madhurya Ras. As bees are intoxicated by the sweetness of honey, so Madhu refers to the spiritually intoxicating effect of conjugal love known as Madhurya Ras. So again, Madhurya Ras, Madhupati also means king of Madhurya Ras. Now, Prabhupada, when he, in Krishna book, he has a beautiful comment which is quoted here, that when Krishna enters the forest, the birds, the trees, and branches were looking very happy. Happy birds, happy trees, happy branches. While there are no clear statements in Bhagavatam regarding the cheerfulness of the branches, Prabhupada emphasizes the fully conscious nature of all things in Braj. Vrindavan is not a realm of dead matter, nor its inhabitants subject to repeated birth and death. Its substance is Chintamani. Thus, the stones, the trees, and branches are fully conscious beings expressing their own pleasure at the enchanting atmosphere and presence of Sri Krishna. Finally, the flute, The star actor in this pastime makes his debut in the last word of the second verse. So Chukuja Venum is in the second verse, and the flute is entering the stage of autumn. We've heard the description of autumn. It is the preparation, the background, and now Sri Venu, he is the master of ceremonies for this drama of this chapter here. Sri Venu.
The conductor?
Yeah, also. I think we will hear about that later. Let's see if it says that here. Yes. Yeah, exactly. That was the next... Well, you have... You're psychic. He is the grand conductor, uniting the many sweet sounds from his master's lips and the acoustic craftsman who weaves a harmonious symphony from the spontaneous glorification of Sri Krishna's attributes. His residence echoes through every hill, valley, forest, and grove of Vrindavan. It calls all birds, beasts, reptiles, waterfalls, and rustling leaves to raise their voices as a reception for Sri Hari. So he's going into the forest. The flute is the conductor to call everyone to sing and glorify Krishna. Knowing that Sri Krishna has come from his home, Vrindavan spreads a carpet of flower pollen and petals and induces the vines, branches, and trees to dance happily in the wind. Multicolored flowers fallen from the trees are the dress of Braj, covering the paths for Govinda, his friends, and the cows. Like all qualified hosts, Vrindavan knows how to worship respectable guests. Thus she offers Panchamrita to her divine visitors. So there's Panchamrita offering. How is the forest going to offer Panchamrita to Krishna? We will hear. The moonstone altars of the forest melt at the appearance of Krishna Balaram's moon-like faces. The ensuing liquid becomes the padya flowing down the path to mix with sprouts and flowers. So this is in puja. You offer padya, durva grass, padya, argya, achman, madhuparka. So these different things are offered by the pujaris to the deities. So the padya is the melting moonstone altars. And the flowers, durva grass, and sprouts offer argya. While the clove buds from the trees are Radha Krishna's mouth water, achman. The honey dripping from the flowers is madhuparka, which is served to them by the many trees bowing down like domesticated servants. So the trees are bowing down, offering honey to Krishna. This is going on when he enters. When you greet someone, then you give all these offerings. So the forest is giving all these offerings to Krishna as he is entering the forest. Vrindavan expands her worship of Sri Krishna by offering different kinds of garlands made of the best self-grown flowers, tulsi leaves, buds, and sprouts. So now we're going to hear about the arti that the forest is offering. First Madhuparka, first the five Panchamrita. Now we'll hear how the forest offers arti to Krishna as he enters. Yes, buds. Our garland maker is not here.
Always learn that we cannot offer buds.
Yes, you can offer buds. It is offerable. The forest offers incense with ascending waves of fragrance in the form of its restless bumblebees. So the bumblebees are offering incense, the fragrance, by moving their wings. So the fragrance is coming up to Krishna. Bumblebees are doing the incense. A lamp, which is the swinging buds of champak flowers waved by the wind. So the lamp is some flowers, champak flowers, waving in the wind. While the songs of the birds are the playing of musical instruments. So we've got the kirtan party, it's the birds. Birds are in charge of kirtan. And the humming of the bees is the arati song the forest joyfully offers. So the bees are actually singing, and the birds are the mridanga and the kartals and the harmonium. Bees are the singers of the arti. While all this is taking place, the trees, burdened by their many fruits and flowers, swing up and down in the wind, blissfully offering their obeisances in the presence of these two brothers. So the trees are dancing. They're the dancers, moving in the wind. So we've got our arti ceremony by the forest when Krishna enters the forest of Vrindavan. Very wonderful. description. And who says there's no life on other planets, as Prabhupada would say. Yes, even the trees know how to worship Krishna in Vrindavan. Okay. This extraordinary arrangement of natural beauty is arranged for Krishna's pleasure by his internal potency, whose personification is known as Vrinda Devi. She is the presiding deity of Braj's forests and groves, and it is after her that Vrindavan has received its name. With a golden complexion tinged with the color of kumkum, Vrinda Devi always dresses in blue clothing and ensures the forests of Vrindavan are properly equipped to fulfill all Sri Govinda's needs. Udipan. So there is Udipan. There's a Nectar of Devotion explains what is Udipan. Those things which awaken ecstatic love are called Udipan. It is instructive to understand Udipan as a division of Vibhava, which is the cause of relishing attachment to Krishna. So the cause of bringing the tasting of love for Krishna is Vibhava. Is described into is divided into two categories: Alamban, support, and Udipan, awakening. So this verse that we're hearing is an Udipan. It's a stimulus for love of Krishna. Yes, number two. All of the verses actually, but especially this verse two. According to Sri Rupa Goswami, Krishna's flute, place of residence, paraphernalia like peacock feather, are some of the impetuses which awaken ecstatic love for him. Introducing the transcendental atmosphere of Vrindavan, Shukadeva Goswami awakens attraction to the Lord within the heart of his reader. Indeed, ecstasy can be awakened by attentive reading of Srimad Bhagavatam. So this verse is an Udipan for awakening ecstatic love of Krishna. Except this whole chapter actually is an Udipan for awakening ecstatic love for Krishna. Srila Prabhupada emphasizes Krishna's food is transcendental, not mundane. It's mixing with the sounds of bees and birds of Vrindavan, and in this case they too are transcendental. Everything is spiritual. When Sri Krishna enters the enchanting atmosphere of Vrindavan, he hears the songs of intoxicated bees, music of the birds, flowing of the rivers, rustling of the leaves. He receives their offerings of flowers, fruits, and scents, sweet waters, and brilliant colors. To reciprocate with their mood of love, he places his flute to his lips and begins to play. So they're doing their arti and everything, and Krishna responds by playing his flute. So that's his response to the arti and to the offering of Achman and all these offerings that the forest of Vrindavan is giving to him.
Is that Udipan part of?
Udipan is a stimulus for ecstatic love. Not viraha, vibhava. Glorious a flute of Krishna. Holding the flute to his lips, Krishna played a slow raga known as Malava Shri, just fit for the autumn season. So we have ragas for the seasons. He's playing Malava Shri. Krishna's lips, red as bimba fruits, drank the nectar of his flute as he finished. His fingers danced deftly over its holes. The abundant flow of nectar emanating from the belly of the flute spread throughout the universe. Besides the intended raga of Malava Shri, the flute seemed to produce a variety of personified tunes. Krishna's face looked very attractive, brightened by his beautiful white teeth shining within his fresh, leaf-like lips. Receiving a kiss from Krishna's dazzling, smiling face, the flute enjoyed the same fortune as his charming lovers. Indeed, the Murali is devoid of defects, even though full of holes. It is astonishing that this hard flute softens the hearts of heartless people and silences the deer, birds, and other forest animals. Though derived from bamboo, Vansha, or a good family, Vansha, like the Chandravansha dynasty, it infects all chaste women with intense attachment to Madhupati. So this is the glories of the flute of Krishna. So verse 3. Tadvrajasya ashutya venugitam smarodayam kashiparoksham krishnasya svasakipyon vavarnayam. The cowgirls began Oops, not yet. When the young ladies in the cowherd village of Braj heard the song of Krishna's flute, which arouses the influence of Cupid, some of them privately began describing Krishna's qualities to their intimate friends. So there's a word in the Sanskrit here which is very important, and that is paroksha, privately. We will hear other interpretations of this word. You've heard the word parokshavad. You've heard that, parokshavad. Indirectly. So we'll hear what that means from the Venugita here, Charya's commentaries. Now, Krishna is going. He's leaving Vrindavan. Krishna sprinkled the eyes of the gopis, which were like thirsty chataka birds, with the stream of his nectarian glance. He announced his departure, and they in turn confirmed their consent with bashful sidelong glances. Keeping the cows in front, Balaram to his right, and the gopas crowding all around, Hari headed for the forest, attracting the minds of all the Brijbasis. When Sri Krishna passed out of view, the Brijbasis became despondent and, losing all purposes in life, stood motionless like an ocean of statues. Their luster dried up like the rivers in summer. Their eyes became lifeless as if possessed by spirits. Sri Krishna, who knew of their condition, desired to give them fresh hope. Placing his horn, Mandagosha, to his lips, he blew it, destroying all inauspiciousness and giving joy to his village folk. Brijbasis remained as they stood, stunned and unwilling to move, giving the image of a still picture or a land possessed by spirits. When they received Sri Krishna's encouraging message, they took their bodies to Nandagram, although their minds had gone with him to the forest. So this is happening in the morning. Returning to the village, the elders took bewildered Nanda and Yashoda. The gopis carried their unconscious Yuteshwaris. Young boys cried hand in hand, and unhappy Kundalata escorted Radha and her girlfriends. In this way, the mechanical movements of the Brijbasis were performed out of habit, like one doll accompanying another. So this is setting the stage for their singing the Venugita. Krishna has left for the forest, and they're back in the village in separation from Krishna. By the agency of Yoga Maya, the gopis, though far from lotus-eyed Krishna, envisaged the scene described in verses 1 and 2 as he entered the forest of Vrindavan, playing his flute and accompanied by his friends and cows. The good fortune of the gopis is incomprehensible to Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, who incessantly covet their complete attachment to Sri Krishna. With their cuckoo-like voices choked with emotion, the gopis constantly sing his glories while milking the cows, churning butter, or cleaning their houses. Even the great devotee Uddhava, Sri Krishna's cousin and advisor, prays to become a clump of grass to get the dust of their lotus feet. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is Sri Krishna, in the mood of the gopis, has conclusively instructed their mode of worship supersedes all others. The verses of Venugita proudly proclaim the devotional attitude of the gopis. A comparable desire to serve Krishna will manifest and grow in the heart of the reader who is desirous of such perfection. In Krishna book later, Prabhupada writes, "The gopis of Vrindavan have set the standard of devotion for the whole world. By following in the footsteps of the gopis and by constantly thinking of Krishna, one can attain the highest perfection of spiritual life." The morning departure for the pasturing ground is called Gocharan. Other than the cowherd boys and cows, all the Brijbasis sorrowfully remain behind to execute their duties, even though they all desire to be with Sri Krishna. To mitigate the pain of separation during his absence, they chant his name, speak of his pastimes, and constantly long for his return. So this song is being sung by the gopis who have been separated from Krishna as he has gone to the forest of Vrindavan in the morning. By their intense desire to be with him, the minds of the young gopis follow Krishna, passing from forest to forest. Shukadev says, "Tam anudruta chetasa," their minds chased after him. So the gopis begin to describe the sound of the flute. Lord Chaitanya compares the flute song to a bird that enters the gopis' ears and creates a nest. This nest obstructs all other sounds and subdues their ability to concentrate on other things. So the flute is like a bird now. It's going into the nest of the gopis' ears. Like beings possessed by ghosts, they constantly hear the hypnotic melody of the flute resounding throughout their beings. Under the narcotic effects on the flute, some gopis have been seen standing by a stove stirring milk that is boiling over. They're hearing the flute, they're stirring the milk, and the milk's boiling over, and they don't see it. Give senseless replies to questions by in-laws. Stand like stone statues in open courtyards. Or speak of intimate topics in a public place. By such events, the Brijbasis fear that evil spirits in the village or some physical disorders are driving their daughters mad. So they're not normal. The words Venugitam, Smarodayam, indicate the vibration of flute is occasioned by the powerful influence of Smara, or Cupid, also known as Kama, transcendental loving affection in conjugal mood. As the all-powerful sun is always in the sky, but only periodically visible, Kama always shines in the gopis' hearts, although not always manifest. Under the influence of dawn, the sun invariably rises over the horizon for all to see. Similarly, the sound of the flute always brings forth Kama from the gopis' hearts, causing its symptoms to appear within their limbs, words, and behavior. The word Smarodayam explains why the gopis are inspired to act and speak as they do. So the flute is causing them to speak all these different words that you'll be hearing soon. Different symptoms of Smarodayam described by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So this is what happens when you hear Krishna's flute. This is what happens to the gopis. 10 different stages, I think. Yes, 10 stages of Cupid's effects. First comes attraction, expressed through the eyes. Then intense attachment in the mind. Then determination, loss of sleep, becoming emaciated, disinterest in external things, shamelessness, madness, becoming stunned, and death. These are the 10 stages of Cupid's effects. So the gopis are experiencing, they are the highest lovers of Krishna, and they are experiencing all these different effects. Yes. So now it talks about Krishna's face. The most exquisite part of Govinda's form is his radiant face. Sweetest part of Krishna's moon-like face is his enigmatic smile, which is the silver moonshine of his countenance and spreads its nectar throughout the world. Without Krishna's smile, sugar would be bitter, honey would be sour, and nectar devoid of taste. So the smile of Krishna is very powerful. When the moonshine of his smile and illumination of his form are combined, they resemble the aroma of camphor. When this camphor enters the flute through Sri Krishna's lips, it emerges as an inexplicable vibration that forcibly attracts the minds of those who hear it. So the smile combined with his form. As the words carry the purport of thought, as the mind is understood through the eyes, as a smile conveys the feelings of the heart, similarly the flute sound transmits the beauty of Krishna. So the flute, by hearing the flute, you can understand the beauty of Krishna. It enters through the ear and installs Krishna in the temple of the heart. So this is the effect of the flute. When the gopis hear, taste, smell, see, and touch that form of beauty, it ignites the lamp of Kama, which glows ever brighter in their hearts. So this is what's happening with the flute. Now, the narration of Venugita describes an especially significant event, a special wonder, Bhava Vishesh, in the flute playing. On this particular beautiful autumn morning, he plays with extraordinary style and unprecedented affection. So the gopis are compelled to comment on the sound on this particular morning. While leaving for the forest, Sri Krishna saw the gopis grieve at their impending separation. Remembering their pale faces and sorrowful glances, his butter-like heart melted, and he sent a soothing message of love through the medium of the flute. Sri Krishna desired to openly express his unfailing love for the gopis. Without reservation, he saturated the holes of his flute with the overflowing nectar of his heart and produced such a special sound it startled all living beings. So that's why the deer, the cows, everybody is going to be. The cows turned their heads as they walked. The coward boys smiled among themselves. The trees and creepers waved in the wind. The flute shivered in its ecstasy. And the master of all enchantment, Sri Krishna, dearly longed for the position of the gopis. The special bhava of the flute wound its way like a mystical snake of enchantment, searching for the mice-like hearts of the gopis, secluded in the hole-like homes of their in-laws. When this vibration found its gopi victims, it caused the deep ocean of their love to swell and the great waves of their kama to rise to their throats. So this is what's happening. Oh, the gopis are on the outskirts of the village, and Krishna and his flute are far, far away. With the bridge of their powerful love, the gopis cross the boundaries of space and time to hear and see Krishna. According to the Acharyas, this takes place by the special desire of Krishna and extraordinary power of the gopis' bhava. So the flute is connecting the gopis and Krishna at this point, and the gopis are going to comment upon that, what they're experiencing. So verse 4. Tavarnitum arabdha smarantya krishna chestitam nashkam smarvegena vikshipta manasar nipa. The cowherd girls began to speak about Krishna, but when they remembered his activities, O king, power of Cupid disturbed their minds, and thus they could not speak. Prabhupada says in Krishna book, persons who are constantly engaged in transcendental meditation of seeing Krishna internally and externally, by thinking of him playing the flute, entering Vrindavan forest and tending the cows with the cowherd boys, have really attained perfection of samadhi. Samadhi means absorption of all activities of senses in a particular object, and the gopis indicate the pastimes of Krishna are the perfection of all meditation and samadhi. It is confirmed in Gita, anyone who is always absorbed in thought of Krishna is the topmost of all yogis. So remember, Uddhava was talking in third canto, one verse, the damsels of Braj, after pastimes of laughter, humor, and exchanges of glances, were anguished when Krishna left them. They used to follow him with their eyes, thus they sat down with stunned intelligence and could not finish their household duties. So here, Shukadeva is saying, O king, because the commentators say, he's saying this because he's feeling the same sentiment as the gopis are feeling. It's arising in his heart. And he's saying, O king, spoken out of distress. Or, another meaning, Sanatana Goswami says, is Shukadeva is observing the rising of loving sentiment in the king himself. And he's holding him, trying to hold him back. O king, you know, be pacified. One or the other, they're being absorbed in this love. The gopis. So let's see Venu Git on this verse. Oh, this is the Parokshavad. Parokshavad. This whole chapter is Parokshavad, indirect. The gopis are speaking indirectly about Krishna. So they want to speak about Krishna, but they can't do so in the presence of their superiors. They're in their houses, the in-laws are there. They just want to speak about Krishna. But they're talking about the flute. The whole chapter is about the flute. Why not about Krishna? Of course, it is about Krishna. But indirectly, indirectly. So the topics of the song of the flute give the gopis ample opportunity to describe its master. So the whole chapter is about the flute, because it has to be indirect. So they glorify his flute playing and speak of Krishna in a covered way. They can't suppress the emotions that cause them to speak, but in speaking they have to cover their true feelings. So that's what this chapter is all about. The gopis, they're feeling great emotion for Krishna, but they're trying to cover it by speaking indirectly about all the deer, the rivers, of Vrindavan. They're glorifying Vrindavan, it looks like, externally. But actually, they're glorifying Krishna. Parokshavad. Krishna is very attracted to such clever language. And it is also said In Bhagavatam, the Lord is celebrated to be known indirectly, 4.28.65. So, Vedic seers and mantras deal in esoteric terms, and I'm also pleased by such confidential descriptions. Why use indirect language to speak in a covered way? The answer lies in the nature of unwedded love in Vrindavan. The gopis are girls in the spring of youth. They are recently married and may even have babies. For them, Vedic culture forbids looking at, what to speak of glorifying, any man other than their husbands. However, in their transcendental relationship, the gopis love Sri Krishna with an attachment inconceivable to the greatest of mystics, so that they must speak. Yet in speaking of him of whom everybody else speaks, they must be careful, lest the true cause of their talk is exposed. Were the feelings of the gopis to become public, it would be a source of embarrassment for them and disgrace to their families. In this way, the language of the gopis remains confidential. It remains understood only by those who share the same mood. So the whole Venugita is spoken in the mood of Parokshavad. It is all Parokshavad, it's all indirect, because the gopis have to cover up their real feelings. So they're talking about Krishna, Balaram, and the cowherd boys also, not just Krishna. Krishna and Balaram are entering the forest with the cowherd boys, not just Krishna. When speaking of the nectar of his lips, so they want to talk about his lips, they glorify the fortune of the rivers and the flute. To meditate on his lotus footprints, they sing of the good fortune of the earth planet, covered by his lotus feet, footprints. To contemplate his blackish complexion, they describe the billowing clouds overhead. The cloud comes as a friend. We'll hear that verse. Indeed, every statement of the gopis is a hidden meditation upon Sri Krishna. So this is how the gopis meditate, in a confidential, indirect, hidden way. They conceal the depths of their love from others while giving vent to an irresistible urge to sing his glories with friends. So, Paroksha also means they spoke privately, as in this verse it says that. The gopis tell Sri Krishna's mother, "Dear Yashoda, when your son plays on his little flute, the great demigods like Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, and King Indra, who are universal controllers and most thoughtful of all scholars, become completely bewildered. Although they are very great personalities, by hearing the sound of your son's flute, they become very grave, trying to understand the nature of its vibration. When having studied it for a long time, they continue to remain baffled. They have no other recourse than to fold their hands and bow down, admitting their defeat." So the demigods can't figure it out, although they are the lords of different kinds of music. So again, another point of this chapter is they are expressing Purvarag. Venugita is the expression of the gopis of Purvarag, is the feeling that before their actual meeting. Here Rupa Goswami defines it, when attachment produced in both the lover and beloved before their meeting, by seeing, hearing, and so on, becomes very palatable by the mixture of four ingredients such as vibhav, anubhav. This is called purva rag. Because it is expressed in the absence of direct contact, purva rag is a type of separation experienced as a stimulus for a further meeting. Although Krishna and the gopis are eternally connected, whenever they meet, it is like the first time, as though they had never met before. It is through the emotions experienced in Purvarag, intensified to a pitch by separation, that eventual meeting becomes most relishable. So it's a way to make meeting more relishable is by having separation from Krishna. As the gopis describe the flute, they remember Sri Krishna's attributes, and as his qualities appear on their tongues, they remember his pastimes. Prabhupada confirms Smarantya Krishna Chastitam means the gopis remembered the many activities Krishna enacted with them. Since in the definition of Purva Rag, the devotee has not yet met Krishna, some reconciliation is required to understand how the gopis remembered pastimes with him. So how is it they remembered if they hadn't met before? So that was actually described here that it's like it's always like the first time. Mm-hmm. So the most frequent opportunity for the gopis to be with Krishna is in the morning when he leaves and when he returns in the evening. In the morning, they would bid farewell, offering blessings and prayers for protection. In the evening, they would gather along the roads in a grand reception. Since many extraordinary events regularly took place in Vrindavan, Sri Krishna's return heralded the news and relieved their anxiety. On the pretext of welcoming Krishna and Balaram, the gopis, like everyone else, were always present on such occasions. And so they were all there. Everybody came to welcome Krishna when he comes home at the end. The elders, headed by Mother Yashoda, were concerned for the well-being of their boys. The children saw the older boys as heroes facing fierce demons. The young gopis went under pretext, impelled by the supreme secret love in their hearts. Their exchange of glances with Krishna expressed more than countless words. So they came to have that exchange with Krishna at the end of the day. But now, at this point, they cannot speak. Just remembering him, then they're choked up. So minds became disturbed by hearing the flute. Although they desired to describe the sound of the flute, their words remained stuck in their throats. So this is gadgada, which means faltering of the voice. So this is the ecstasy the gopis are feeling here. Now, the conclusion of this, the spiritual experiences of love expressed by the gopis are accessible to all who hear the pastimes of Krishna from Srimad Bhagavatam. To exemplify this, Sanatana Goswami points to the last word of the verse, Nripa, as an exclamation of ecstasy by Shukadev Goswami. By relating the experience of the gopis, he was also feeling their special bhava. As a result of increasing smara, he almost fainted. To maintain his composure, he called out, O King! So that's the O King in this verse here. So, we will stop here. Any questions or comments on these four verses? Introduction to Venu Gita. Yes?
At one point, there is something about Vrinda Devi.
Yeah.
There have been explanation about it. He's in charge of all the movements of the forest. Hmm. The forest here somewhere. I don't remember which one. All the colors, movements, smell, everything. She's in charge of that.
Yes.
So that was meant by saying that Vrinda Devi or something.
Yeah, she's in charge. Well, she also appears, gives the paraphernalia for the pastimes. Beds, chamaras, food, intoxicating beverages. That's what this reference was here. Uh-huh. And she gives what he needs, what they need for their pastimes. She equips the kunjas.
Chaitanya Maharaj, mm-hmm. that according to her, it's under her supervision.
Mm.
How the women be the color of trees.
And that also.
And when they Radha Krishna, they have pastime and what did they dress? Sometimes it's night.
Right.
Dark
moon.
And then everything is dark. It would protect her.
Yes. Nobody will see her going.
Yeah, and the sky is particular color.
Yes, she is the stage organizer for the pastimes, for the dramas of Krishna. And she provides the props as well.
What?
Props. Props, P-R-O-P. She gives the props for the drama.
How old is Krishna here? Approximately?
In Venu Gita, he is... Six.
What is it, props still?
Six.
He's
still in Pauganda.
He's quite ahead, actually.
Yes, he's like Kishore. Although his age is Pauganda, he's like... His ten. Development is like Kishore.
He's like 10.
Yeah. And when he's... Because when he lifts Govardhan Hill, he's 7. That comes after this.
So
he's only 7.
He looks like 10.
And then when he has Rasila, he's 8. So there you go. Which is like... So he's... No, it's Krishna. You missed the first part of our seminar, of our classes. Yeah, Krishna... No, Krishna is like that. He's ahead of his age.
Way ahead.
Because it's described, you can figure it out. He leaves Vrindavan at the age of 10 years and some months, almost 11. And then he's described to be at the Kaishora then. He's 15. He's like 15. Yes, about at the end, by the time at the end, it's 4 years difference. So when he's 8, he's more like 10, 12, 11, 12, 13.
What a wonderful lady is that when he's 125, he's still like 16.
Yeah, when he's 125, then he's 15, 16 year old. Yeah, so that's props. Props. Yeah. Who knows Russian? Can you tell it in Russian? Props, stage props. Oh, you don't know. It means what you need in the stage, like the scenery and the chairs, costumes. Yeah. Paraphernalia. Yeah. For the drama. So Brinda Devi, she provides the props, the paraphernalia for the drama that is going to be performed every day. Yes, they don't need to rehearse. They've done it millions of times, eternally. Yeah, they're eternally engaged in this. And it's always like the first time.
We are rehearsing,
yes. We are rehearsing to join the drama of Krishna's pastimes. We are practicing, we are rehearsing for the drama. That's right. We are rehearsing for the drama of Krishna. Krishna's pastimes, and Lord Chaitanya's pastimes too. We are rehearsing. We are in the pastimes as well. It hasn't stopped. It's an extension. Prabhupada has extended Lord Chaitanya's pastimes to the whole world. And so it's all part of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. We just heard in a purport somebody read in Bhagavatam class recently that the pastimes are still going on, being carried on by the followers of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. Prabhupada wrote that. The Sankirtan pastimes are going on.
And also Prabhupada says here in the previous chapter that ISKCON is Krishna.
ISKCON is Krishna. Krishna has appeared in the womb of ISKCON. ISKCON is the mother of Krishna.
ISKCON is incarnation of the Lord.
Any other questions and comments on this Venu Geet, Parokshavad and Purvarag, that is the mood of this chapter. So we're diving into the ocean of Madhurya Ras now. It'll be, and next year we'll the first class we'll be diving. So it'll be a preparation for next year. Yes. Wait. I don't know. It's when they meet the Rasa after they meet. The gopis, they go across to the Jumuna to worship Durvasa. And then he gives a benediction that her cooking will be like nectar and whoever eats it will never suffer. So after that, then she starts, but what age? I don't know. It doesn't appear like that. No, it could be because they're with him in the morning. They're with Krishna in the morning cooking. She's cooking there. Could be. I don't know, actually. I can't say. I can't say at what age that happened. He cannot speak Radha's name. Radharani's name. If he speaks it, he'll go into trance. If we speak it, then it's all right. We don't have that problem. Vaishagriya Goswami is Radharani's pet parrot. So he's very close to Radharani. And he knows everything. Of all people, he would be the... That's why, actually, I read that... that's why he spoke Bhagavatam.
Shiva thinks that. Yesterday, may not know the Bhagavatam. I know a little bit, but Shukadeva knows.
Yes. And that's why he was chosen to speak Bhagavatam. Although Vyasadeva, Narada, everybody was there. But Shukadeva was the most qualified. Because he was there for the pastimes. He saw the pastimes in Vrindavan. So he's the most qualified to speak. Actually, although he was younger. Yes, and we're also part of that step by step. Not accident. Jai Nitekor.
May were explaining that they discovered that the gopis expressing in a covered way.
Mm-hmm.
Then you gave the examples of Krishna's.
I think that's Anatan Goswami. Yeah, I was quoting from Samacharya, which is
this book. I don't know.
Yeah, it's from this book. Yeah, the cloud and
here,
the.
I'm a little bit. I just glanced at the fifth text.
Fifth text.
And here looks like.
Looks like it's only Krishna.
Gopis are speaking about him, like he fills his with his nectar of his lips. There's no covering.
Yes, they just didn't mention his name. No names mentioned here.
But I think that the gopis only start speaking afterwards.
Yes, yes. Actually, this is not the gopis speaking. Oh, no, it says there. Actually, they could not speak. Yeah, it's Shukadev. Shukadev speaking. They'll start speaking in verse 7. Verse 7, Shri Gopya Uchu.
Oh, because here it says the covered girls began to speak about Krishna.
They could not speak.
Four.
Yeah, they began. They started, but then they were stunned and they couldn't speak. They started to speak, and then they got stunned by Cupid, and then they couldn't speak. So yes, this is Shukadeva Goswami speaking, and verse 7, Shigopia, which who they'll start speaking. Verse seven.
Oh yeah, he's describing because Prabhupada says that they remembered. So he is describing.
I mean, their remembrance. Yes, what they are remembering. This is the meditation in their heart, verse 5. Meditation in their mind. No, it wasn't spoken. No, they were just thinking. The first thing they talk about is the, they're talking these two sons, Krishna Balaram, verse 7. They enter the forest, they hold their flutes to their mouths. So people will think, oh, okay. Not just Krishna. Yes.
Paroksha or paroksha means indirect and
yes.
Also privately.
Privately, yes.
In what sense does it mean privately? Hidden or?
No, it means just with their friends. They're talking to each other, to their friends, sakis, in the houses, and they're meeting and they're talking together, privately. And we're eavesdropping on what the gopis are talking to each other about. We are hearing, we are so fortunate. We have become like those bees, but we're following Radharani and the gopis instead of Krishna. Huh?
And
Balaram. Yes?
Is it some information after hearing all this Srimad Bhagavatam, Sarish Maharaj left his body? What happened with Shukadeva Goswami?
He is a Mahajan.
He leaves on the fifth chapter of the 12th canto. He leaves the scene.
He leaves the scene.
He doesn't even wait that Parikshit needs his body. He's so detached. And Sutta takes over.
Yeah. Where he is right now, I can't say.
No, he's totally
we don't know.
He leaves,
but we don't know if he leaves. He doesn't necessarily leave his body.
No, but he leaves the scene.
That's not the question. Yeah. Okay. Any other questions or comments? 12th canto, 12:5. Any other comments or questions on Venugit? We know also what the sound is. The sound of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Venu, the sound of Krishna's flute. Lord Brahma was initiated, also Gayatri Mantra, sound of Krishna's flute. Lord Brahma was initiated by Krishna's flute. So that was his initiation ceremony, hearing the flute song. According to Chaitanya Charitamrita, he was initiated. Gayatri Mantra. And so you will hear a lot about this famous flute sound in the next few days. Yeah, so many flutes. Yes. Okay, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.